Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome to the Politics Guys with your hosts, Jay Parson and Michael Baranowski.
Welcome to the Politics Guys. I'm Michael Baranowski, a political scientist at Northern Kentucky University. My co-host this week, as always, is Cleveland area attorney and sometime Republican strategist, Jay Carson. Here's our Ask the Politics Guys question for this week, Jay.
Okay, fire away.
It comes from Jonathan from, make sure I get this right, Agawagun, Kochi, Japan.
Wow.
Yeah, another international question, which is really cool, I think. So, here it is.
We are huge in Japan.
We are, yeah. So, thanks, Jonathan, for your question. Here it is. Dear Politics Guys, why do minorities seem to support Clinton over Sanders? And on the Republican side, two Latinos, Cruz and Rubio, are among the three frontrunners, and an African-American, Ben Carson, and until very recently, a woman, Carly Fiorina, were still in the GOP race, as was an ethnic Indian, Bobby Jindal. And in 2012, the Republicans nominated a Mormon, and in 2008, they nominated a woman for vice president. Given all that, why doesn't the GOP get more credit for having such diversity in its presidential candidates? So we have really kind of two related questions here.
I thought
we'd take them obviously one at a time. So why don't we, if you're okay with that, we can start with the Democratic, the first part of the question, the Democratic one, and then move on to the Republican side. Okay?
Yes, that sounds good.
So, okay, the first part of the question again, why do minorities seem to support Clinton over Sanders?
Nope. Well, I think, you know, we touched on this a little bit on the Sunday podcast that had come out, but nobody will have heard that yet, but when they hear this Wednesday. But I think part of it is Clinton has made more inroads to that community over the years through her husband's presidency. The Democratic Party tends to be a at least in my view, a coalition of interest groups rather than a party with one overriding philosophy, ideology, at least less so than the Republicans. So Clinton's done well playing the game of working to please the certain minority groups, minority leaders.
Identity politics, sometimes called.
Yeah, that's what we'll call it, yeah. So she's sort of built an advantage there. And also, you know, so many of the folks who... You know, and politics so often comes down to the wards and the precincts and so forth, and knowing who to talk to in various neighborhoods even. And the party does well organizing there, and those folks are, for lack of a better term, sort of the establishment Democratic Party. So she is going to do better among them.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important for people to understand the history of the Clintons here, and some of our listeners might not have that historical background just because they're a lot younger than we are. I'll try not to be envious. But back in 1998, this is toward obviously the end part of Bill Clinton's presidency, in an article in The New Yorker, Toni Morrison, the famous author, who, by the way, was born in Lorain, Ohio. I don't know
yes,
if you knew that.
Yep.
Okay. She called Bill Clinton our first black president.
Yep.
And she followed it up by saying he was blacker than any actual black person who could ever be elected in our children's lifetime.
Right.
So Toni Morrison might have missed the boat on that part. But in explaining it, she said, Clinton displays almost every trope of blackness, single-parent household, born poor, working class, saxophone playing. I don't know if that's really a particular, but whatever. McDonald's and junk food loving boy from Arkansas. You know, and I think, you know, pretty clearly.
And my God, if Mike, let's be honest, if I said anything like that, Al Sharpton would be loading up the bus.
Yes, you are not Toni Morrison. Yeah, Toni, she has the ability to say those things that you don't. But I think the point here, obviously, is the fact that someone like Toni Morrison would say that, and that would be seen as a not crazy thing, at least by a lot of people on the left. It gets at the depth of black support for the Clintons and how long that's been there. And so with Hillary Clinton, black voters have somebody who they feel like they know, who has a history, who's been behind their causes and so forth. Whereas Sanders is just this guy who came out of nowhere from, you know, an old cranky white guy from Vermont who doesn't even seem to be talking about their issues. And so, of course, I mean, to me, it makes perfect sense. And if you take a look right now, Clinton's net favorable rating among blacks is 78. Sanders's is 36. So that's a huge difference. Now, it's a little different with Hispanics.
I'm surprised Sanders even has 36.
I think another another way to look at it is I looked at Public Policy Polling as a big national polling organization, and they did favorable, unfavorable. They had Clinton with 79% favorable, 9% unfavorable. Yeah. Sanders with only 27% favorable, but 23% unfavorable and 50% unsure. And I think that's a big part of it, because some of these polls don't ask the unsure question. But, he's new. People don't know what to expect from him on the national stage. I mean, with Hillary Clinton, pretty much, if you're at all conscious of national politics, you kind of know what to expect with Hillary Clinton.
If you've been awake in the last 20 years. And, the point I made on the Sunday podcast, I think, is a good one, and I'm actually a little impressed with myself. about the groups that the Bernie Sanders appeals to, and the fact that his message is ideological, more so than the piecemeal. We're going to get this for this group. We're going to get this for this group. We're going to get this for this group. It's this broad redistribution type argument, and I think it plays great to college kids. And I think it plays great to some extent to the white working class. I don't think it plays well to African-Americans.
No, I think, again, it's that contrast between what I called identity politics, which Sanders is not doing, and an economic message. And Sanders is pretty much like a one-issue kind of guy. He's an economic message guy, and everything comes from that. And actually, I have a lot of sympathy for that message. I tend to believe that the value of follow the money when you're trying to understand politics. But for a lot of folks, especially on the Democratic side, that's not going to be a compelling message, as you pointed out.
Well, I have more sympathy for that message. And again, I hate to say I have sympathy for Bernie Sanders, but just to the effect that I think that's a better way to run a campaign. It focuses on the here is a significant policy issue and we can all get up behind, as opposed to playing identity politics, which I think just is, in a practical manner, is bad for everybody. It's sneaky dishonest and so forth, but that's another argument. But I think that's why Sanders doesn't appeal. He hasn't courted the black vote, and he's not courting the black vote. He is more courting the, again, this will be a stereotype.
Idealistic young white kid.
Exactly. You know, little rich college kids from New England.
Which is not going to do it for him. And that's why I think from the beginning, you and I have been extraordinarily skeptical of Sanders' ability to pose a real threat to Hillary Clinton for the nomination, because go ahead.
And the other thing is Bernie Sanders also doesn't really have any sense of dealing with the either issues of African Americans in the South or in the northern industrial cities.
Right.
And he doesn't have any inroads there in the Clevelands, Detroits, Chicago's. Although he did just open an office right here in Lakewood.
Oh, huh, okay.
But again, Lakewood.
Lakewood is not
probably fits more into that idealistic college kid demographic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than certainly downtown Cleveland does.
But I think too,
at least Cleveland.
My sense is that Bernie Sanders is kind of stuck because that isn't his message, and if he tries to pivot to try to expand to have more of an identity politics message, he's going to sound incredibly inauthentic. And that's the one huge advantage he has over Hillary Clinton is he is authentic, and Hillary Clinton is almost completely inauthentic. And so he's sort of stuck on that. I mean, he's just like Donald Trump in a sense, is I think he has kind of a lower ceiling than Hillary Clinton does, because he can't change fundamentally who he is, because his appeal is that he's not that typical sort of politician. So I think he's kind of stuck, essentially.
Yep. Agreed. So, agreed.
All right. Well, I think that kind of covers the first part of the question, would you say?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So again, the second question.
The second one's tougher. Yeah.
Well, maybe for you, not so much for me. But again, the question was just to remind everyone that given all the diversity in who's running for president now, who has been running for president on the Republican side, and who Republicans have nominated, why don't they get more credit for diversity? So I'll let you take that one to start with, Jay. What do you think? Why do you think Republicans get sufficient credit or not?
Oh, not at all. Of course not. And the why not, it sort of beats the hell out of me. I guess the default answer would be that's not the narrative that the media has constructed, and that that's not the story they put out. And I think so much of the way things are reported, there's a narrative that's put together, and if facts fit in that narrative, great. If they don't, well, then we're just not really going to talk about that story. And I think that's part of it. I think the Democrat Party is also zealously guards its sway with minority voters, and whenever you have someone on the Republican side who is a minority, there will be attacks, really sort of nasty attacks, to knock them out as being inauthentic. So I think that's part of it. The other thing is, and this is maybe just part of the, again, Republican philosophy, is we tend not to focus on the identity politics issue. So it's not as if...
So you don't want credit for diversity, because that's not the point.
Yeah. I mean, in some
okay,
ways, yeah.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
Right. I think we'd like to say, I mean, to me, and I think Rubio's a good candidate because I like the things he says. I like his ideas. I like his presentation, and I like his judge. Now, Cruz, I don't particularly like, but that's a different thing. But
not because
either way, it has nothing to do with him being Hispanic.
Yeah.
I mean, do I see some political advantages to that? Yes. Is it a huge advantage? No. The same thing goes for Ben Carson. I really respect him as a person. I think he's a terrible candidate, but
it has nothing to do with his race. Yeah.
But either way, it's not a matter of I see him as, oh, he's the black guy. And, I guess there is maybe just a fundamental way that Republicans view their party differently.
Yeah. Jay,
I'm happy for that. I'm much rather live in take that view that, the color of your skin or your ethnicity shouldn't be seen as a proxy for your ideology.
Yeah. I could not agree with you more. I am in absolute agreement with you on that. I think.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I think we see this issue exactly the same way. I think it has really come to the fore. Actually, I'll mention on the Democratic side, where Hillary Clinton pulled out a couple of ancient feminist women, basically, Madeleine Albright and Gloria Steinem, who basically feel like that if they speak on issues relating to women, that all women should line up behind them because they're women.
There's a special place in hell for the people who don't support Hillary.
Exactly. And I found that so incredibly offensive, as did, I think, a lot of younger female voters.
There's probably even a more special place in hell for those who do, but go on.
And I think that's the sort of identity politics message that's driven me crazy for, well, as long as you've known me, and even before that. So that's quite a long time, because to me, I don't care. It didn't matter to me that Barack Obama was black, still is black. It doesn't matter to me that Hillary Clinton is a woman. What matters to me is that we have someone running things who has a vision that I can buy into and is a competent and compassionate, well, not compassionate. It's great if you're compassionate, but I'm much more concerned that you're a competent person.
Sure.
And I think it says something really good about this country that we can elect a black man to be president of the United States. I think that says something great about it. But the fact that we keep on talking about people in relation to their color, their skin, or their gender, and as if that should be some sort of a qualification for office, is, God, that this makes me, that makes me sad.
Yeah. Wow. That's really refreshing to hear.
I don't know what
the solution is, though, is to, again,
I don't think there is a solution.
The Republicans, I mean, again, you can have a diverse field. You can nominate a minority candidate or a candidate from an ethnic minority or a woman candidate. I just don't think they're ever going to get the credit for it, partially because they're not able to really seek it because they don't see it as something you got to get credit for.
Because it doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
And regardless, the media, as I said, has that narrative of Republicans are racist, you know, and that's sort of the box that they're going to put it in. So.
Yeah, because essentially, if they nominate anyone, that candidate's going to be basically just a token, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's refreshing every once in a while that we have essentially no daylight between us on these issues, you know.
So
I don't think I think we can say that on the second question, the Republicans don't get more credit in part because Democrats certainly feel that what they're doing isn't real diversity because these people don't, that they're nominating or that they're putting forward, don't represent the views of the vast bulk of whatever minority group it is or other group it is. But I think our view would be this should be a non-issue, even though it isn't.
Yeah, and one last thing. In the Republican primaries, I think this is something that's really significant, is if you look at who the leaders are and the fact that they kind of bubble to the top and come and go, regardless of race or ethnicity, is telling. There was a time when Colin Powell was the most respected man in the Republican Party.
Yeah, definitely.
There was a draft Colin Powell, you know, idea that he should be a president. But, you know, Colin Powell came around and he said a lot of things that were really sort of non-conservative. And you know,
well, I like him. Yeah, I know.
But again, the party backed off and he's sort of, you know, diminished. He's not considered as someone that we want. But look, the color of his skin hasn't changed. People made their judgments on Colin Powell based on what he did and what he said.
Yeah.
The same thing goes for Herman Cain in the last primary cycle, who was leading the pack briefly.
Yep.
Until he had some personal issues come up. But again, it certainly showed that the Republicans had no issue of saying, hey, I really like what this guy is saying. I don't care what color he is. I think he's got a good message. And then when they found out that he had some personal flaws that really would make him his governing difficult, yeah. they backed off. And the same thing can be said for Ben Carson.
Which is not to say that there aren't some elements in the party who would have a big problem with voting for someone because of the color of his or her skin. I mean, that's certainly been an issue. Remember back in, South Carolina primary, in fact, when John McCain was running for the nomination against George W. Bush, those ugly rumors about John McCain having a black child and people would maybe not vote for him because South Carolina is well known for its super dirty politics. I mean, of course, there are elements of people like that in the party, and you're going to find more of those people in the Republican Party right now than the Democratic Party. But it's one thing to say that
I disagree.
Well, there are some racists in the Republican Party. There are more racists in the Republican Party than in the Democratic Party, but the Republican Party as a whole is not a racist party. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I appreciate the second part of the statement.
The first part is true. I mean, it's absolutely
so
true.
Well,
what's that?
We're getting along so well for a while there. But no, I think that's part of it. And I think, look, yes, there are racists in America. But
more of them in the Republican Party than the Democrat. That's all. I'm not. You know, I'm not saying anything further than that, and I'm not again saying that the Republican Party is built on racism or that it has a, you know, it tries to implement racist policies. I don't believe any of that. But
okay.
But anyway.
Well, I'll leave it there then.
Okay.
I can tell you, you know, again, the funny thing is the racist Republicans in Ohio nominated Ken Blackwell several years ago.
Sure.
Very conservative black man. Who went on to get absolutely trounced in the general election. So if the idea that, again, I think these many black leaders and now Hispanics have risen to prominence in the Republicans, in the Republican Party, especially in the primary part of it here, where it's the more activist voters are out there. So I think if there are racists, they are negligible and their voices, I don't think, are being heard or carrying the day in the party.
I would definitely I would agree with that. So we can end, at least on a little bit of note of, of comedy there, which is good. So all right. Well, I think that answers the question. I would say, wouldn't you, Jay? We covered everything.
Would.
Okay, great. Well, then that's it for this episode of Ask the Politics Guys. Thanks everyone for listening. If you have any questions for future episodes or just any thoughts, comments, or criticisms, we'd love to hear from you. Our email is politicsguys@gmail.com. That's politicsguys, one word, @gmail.com. Our Facebook page, where Jay and I post and comment on news articles throughout the week, and where you can comment too, and where you can also send us messages with Facebook, with questions for future Ask the Politics Guys, is facebook.com/politicsguys page, one word. Check it out and maybe give us a like. And if you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher, we would really appreciate it if you could take just a minute to rate the show and write a quick review. That really matters in terms of getting the show out and getting it exposed to more people. So, all right, well, then we'll be back next week with a new episode on Wednesday. We hope you'll join us.